Thanks for listening to the Book Club at 91.7 here on WPXU and WMUB. I'm Mark Purcell. Good morning. You may not recognize the name the Lewis Chessmen, but I can guarantee you would recognize them if you saw them. They are 92 chessmen found on a Hebridean beach back in the 1830s, the best-known Scottish archaeological find of all time. The new book, Ivory Vikings, explores that chess set. It's Ivory Vikings, the mystery of the most famous chessmen in the world and the woman who made them. Nancy Marie Brown, the author, is on the phone with me to talk to you about the Lewis Chessmen. Nancy, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Thank you, Mark. Happy to be here.
So I did a rough description of what the Lewis Chessmen are, but please share with the audience, as I said, you have seen these. You just don't realize you've seen these. Talk about the Lewis Chessmen.
Oh, they're just about everywhere. If you look in modern culture, they're Harry Potter's chess set. When he was learning how to play chess in the first Harry Potter movie, they used the Lewis chess set as the pieces that come to life and show him how to play. They're in the Disney Pixar film Brave. They also come to life in this story to teach the little princess about chaos and ruin. There's in some old-fashioned movies like The Seventh Seal and Beckett and things like that. There's recently been a mystery series set on Lewis by Peter May, mystery novels, and one of them is called The Chessmen. It's all about the chessmen and where they were found and people who make reproductions of them. So they're on the cover of an Agatha Christie mystery. There's a children's book by Francesca Simon about them. There's a story in the Doctor Who series. There's Scottish folk singer Dougie MacLean sings a song about them. So, they kind of crop up everywhere. Of course, they're on, handbags and tea towels and mugs and that kind of stuff at the British Museum and the National Museum of Scotland. T-shirts. I got a T-shirt from Uig in Lewis, where they were found. But they really are just gorgeous little representations of people. And they have these bug eyes, and they have these amazingly diverse expressions. There's no two exactly the same, though their poses are similar. And, they just talk to us across the ages. You kind of connect with them as soon as you see them. They're just really cool little figures. And to think that they were made around 1200 and they still speak to us is really, really fascinating to me.
And not...
Some people say they kind of look like the Simpsons.
I think that's giving a compliment to The Simpsons more than
Jesse.
And you actually had an opportunity that many don't to actually handle some of these chessmen. And
I was just blown away at the opportunity. I had contacted the curators of the British Museum and the Scottish National Museum and said, I'm going to be coming to see the chessmen and I'd like to talk to you about them. And I got a response back from Scotland, and he said, well, I'm so sorry, I'm going to be at a conference, but I'll pass you on to my colleague. And the colleague then, said, I'm so sorry, I'm going to be at a conference, but I'll pass you on to my colleague. And the next colleague said, oh, I'll be there. Which ones did you want to see?
Wow.
And I thought, okay, this is interesting. So I picked out four. And she said, if you can come before the museum opens, if you can be at the back door at 8 o'clock, I'll let you in and I'll have them on my desk and you can study them before they go on display. And I'm breathing really heavily at this point. And I said, yes, I'll be at the back door at 8 o'clock. And so I showed up, and Jackie Moran, the curator, she takes me into her office, which is an art historian's studio with big tables covered with tissue paper, and the chessmen are lying there in little pillows, and she says, here, put on these purple gloves, plastic gloves, and here's a magnifying glass, and have a good time. You've got an hour and a half with them.
Wow.
And I just, I could pick them up, I could turn them over, I could take all kinds of pictures, and really, they just look alive when they're in your hand. It's like they were just made. They're gorgeous pieces. I had picked out two pieces that had flaws in them, because I really wanted to look at how they were made. And the one piece that I describe at great length in the beginning of the book is the tiniest of all the face pieces. It's the little queen, and she's sitting on her beautifully carved throne, and she has her hair up in braids, and she's wearing a veil, and it's clipped beautifully in the back, and she has bangle bracelets, and she has some kind of embroidery or fur around her sleeves and the bottom of her gown. I mean, it's beautifully detailed. And then she has this expression of kind of, you know, bugged out eyes, and her right hand just clapped to her cheek like she's saying, "What? What on earth is going on?" But this piece of ivory that she was carved out of was not a really good piece. You see, a walrus tusk is what they were carved out of, and it has a thin rim of beautiful, smooth ivory, but the center of a walrus tusk is kind of grainy and marbly, and one curator says it looks sort of like popcorn. So this piece had some of that, what we call secondary dentine, showing. There wasn't enough of a beautiful ivory rim to carve the entire chess piece. And so this artist had taken another piece of ivory, maybe from the same tusk, and she had tacked it on to the side of the throne so that she would have a beautiful, smooth piece of ivory to carve. And it is so delicately done that you can pick up this piece and you can look at it and you say, how did she fix that on? How did that work? And it wasn't until I blew up the photographs I'd taken that I saw these little tiny ivory pins that she had stuck in to make it fit on. And you could see that she had put on this extra piece before she did the carving, because the carving itself is so, you know, smooth and uninterrupted. So it was really a wonderful insight into how somebody actually made this thing, 800 years ago? Like traveling back into time.
Yes. Nancy Marie Brown is the author of Ivory Vikings, The Mystery of the Most Famous Chessmen in the World and the Woman Who Made Them. And you were using the feminine pronoun there as you're talking about carving these pieces. And that's part of the mystery about these chessmen. Where did they come from? And after all, there are 92 of them.
There are 92, but there's only 56 that are actual chessmen. So they're face pieces. We have some pawns, and not all the pawns are, I mean, they're just like stones, tombstones almost looking like octagonal pieces. And some of them are carved and some of them are not. And there aren't enough of them to really play chess. And then there's some discs that might be like checkers. There was also a buckle found in the horn. So these things all might have been in a bag together and then buried or secreted somewhere on the Isle of Lewis. There's so many conflicting stories about when they were found and where they were found that we can't even say what place and year they were found on the Isle of Lewis. That's even controversial. When we get to the part of where they were made and where they came from, we have no facts. We have a lot of suppositions, speculations, assumptions, deductions, interpretations, you know, whatever you want to call it. One of the things we do know is that the bishops are wearing a hat called a mitre. And this hat has what they call a gabled front, which means that the point looks like the front gable of your house.
Yes.
Well, before 1140, the hat would have been turned sideways, so that the points looked almost like horns. And somebody realized that bishops wearing horns was not a good connotation. So they turned the hat so that the points are front and back, and then it looks like the gables on a house. And we know from, you know, other illustrations that can be dated that this change happened sometime around 1140 or 1150. So we know that the chessmen were made after that, when the bishop's fashion changed. We also have on the backs of the thrones a style of design that is called Romanesque, and it is found all over Europe in about the 12th century and the 13th century. But some of the actual designs make us understand that this came from Scandinavia. The other thing that makes us know that it came from Scandinavia are that the rooks are not castles. They are little warriors, and some of them are biting their shields. And biting your shield is what a berserk does. And a berserk is the Norse or Viking warrior who goes mad in battle frenzy and bites his shield, and he, you know, can't be killed, and he runs through the battle. This is a motif that's only found in the Scandinavian and Norse lore, folklore, and mythology. And interestingly, all of that was written down in Iceland. So we have a first connection to Iceland there, because the descriptions of berserks coming from the 12th and 13th century are all Icelandic descriptions. Other than that, I mean, we can pinpoint the walrus ivory probably came from Greenland, which was the main source of walrus ivory at that time. It could have come from Iceland. There's a couple of people arguing that right now. But we can say with some, you know, authority that they were made in the Norse world, and sometime between 1150 and 1250. Now, to narrow it down further, you have to make another series of assumptions, and one of the assumptions that many art historians make is that they were made in a town, because that's where most craftsmen were. And I don't think that's a good assumption in this case, because I learned of this bishop in Iceland, Bishop Paul of Skálholt, who had many artists on his payroll to beautify his church and to make beautiful things for him to send to his colleagues in Greenland and Norway and the Orkney Islands. He may have also given gifts to the kings of Norway and Denmark. These names of these artists are listed in his saga, and some of the things that they made and some of the people that they made them for. So we can pinpoint that around the year 1190 to 1211, there was this very rich man in Iceland who had at least four artists on his payroll and had given at least one ivory object to someone in Norway. And this was a walrus ivory bishop's crozier that was carved by a woman named Margaret the Adroit. And Margaret was said to be the best ivory carver in all of Iceland. And she worked for the Bishop of Skálholt. So we have the name of someone. We have something she made. We know that he had enough money to do this sort of thing. We know that he had access to walrus ivory because his family pretty much controlled the walrus ivory trade between Greenland and Iceland. And archaeologists are finding that that was bigger than we thought it was. They're finding more and more ivory in Iceland. So I thought, well, why couldn't Margaret have made these things? And in fact, there is a man in Iceland who has presented this theory in great detail, and I went and talked to him and said, you know, I think you're probably right, Guðmundur. So I tracked down all of the sources that he had used and went to some of the museums and saw the competing artwork, and I think it's just as good a theory as any other theory we have of where the chessmen were made. So my title is a little bit more forceful than I am in the text of the book.
Yes.
I do. Yeah, I give equal time to the theory that they were made in Trondheim, and I try to point out the flaws in all of these theories. But to me, it's a great story. Here's this talented artist in Iceland. Here is this rich man commissioning things. And here are these beautiful objects that were made at about the same time. And maybe they're connected. And I found ways in which they could be connected using the Icelandic sources.
Well, I want to ask about your love of Vikings. We only have a moment or two left, but I wanted to ask about your love of Vikings, because you've written previous books about Vikings and seem very swept up. As I was reading Ivory Vikings, I was struck by your passion for the subject.
Well, I kind of got started reading Icelandic sagas in a sort of a roundabout way. I usually trace it back to when I was 4 years old and my babysitter read me The Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien. And I discovered Tolkien's Lord of the Rings when I was 13. And when I got to college, I said, well, that's what I want to study. I want to study a Tolkien. And they looked at me down their long noses and said, we don't study fantasy in the English department. That's escapist literature. I think nowadays you can get a degree in Tolkien, but you couldn't back when I was in college. And so I said, well, let me study what Tolkien studied. And he was a professor of Old Norse and Anglo-Saxon at Oxford. He started a club where they translated the Icelandic sagas for fun. And after I read my first Icelandic saga, I realized how much fun that would be. So I read the Icelandic sagas that I could find in English, and then I learned Old Norse to read the ones that had not yet been translated. And I went to Iceland and completely fell in love with the country. I've brought back Icelandic horses. I have an Icelandic dog. I'm sitting here wearing an Icelandic sweater.
Wow.
You know, people laugh at me that I'm more Icelandic than an Icelander. But when you look at the Viking Age, almost everything we know about the history of the Vikings from their own point of view was written down in Iceland in the Middle Ages. And these are the Icelandic sagas and also the Eddas, which are poetry and collections of something that was written by Snorri Sturluson to teach people how to understand Viking poetry. And that includes a lot of the Norse mythology that was the subject of one of my previous books. You can't really discuss Vikings without reading and understanding Icelandic and Icelandic medieval works. So everything that I do kind of comes back to that that center of medieval Iceland, medieval Icelandic saga.
Well, Nancy, thanks for your time and thanks for your research into the Ivory Vikings. It was it is a very thought-provoking work.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed talking to you.
Nancy Marie Brown. Her book is Ivory Vikings, The Mystery of the Most Famous Chessmen in the World and the Woman Who Made Them. I know you will love the expressive faces on these chess pieces when you pick up the book. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. This is the Book Club at 91.7.